Welcome to the Run Yogi Diaries podcast. Thanks for stopping by. My name is Santosh Shiva. I'm the podcast host and the creator. This podcast is about stories. Through conversations with ordinary people on extraordinary journeys through their endurance sports achievements, we explore their motivations, strategies, and what keeps them going. Each of us have the possibility to be athletic. And being athletic is not just physical. It is also a victory of our will over the ordinary circumstances that we live in. I hope you take back some inspiration, some motivation, and hopefully go back and perspire. Stay inspired. In the house today, very glad to have a dear friend, Shankar Muniyappa from California, who I met professionally but got to know personally. His journey around fitness and cycling is quite amazing. Started with recreational cycling and went on to do endurance cycling. But what's also important is how he's included his family as well as community in his journey, inspiring others and making fitness, spreading the joy, really. Let's dig in and find out his amazing journey. If you're new to this channel, please do remember to subscribe. Do like the video if you enjoyed the conversation. And leave your comments below and let us know what you think. Let's dig in. Hey Shankar, welcome to Run Yogi Diaries.
Hi Santosh, my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me here.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. You have an interesting story with regards to endurance and fitness. So, I think there's much to talk about and learn from your own journey. But let me maybe give a stab at introducing you and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
So, Shankar, you go by you're Shankar Muniyappa. That's your full name. Live in Bay Area, California. You're a tech professional. That's what you do for a living. But you also are an ardent bicyclist and an endurance bicyclist as well. And a huge proponent of fitness, both physical and mental, for working professionals especially. And I also like the fact that you and your wife have kind of also used endurance sports to make marriage more interesting. So we should also talk a little bit about that, right?
Okay.
You're also a community organizer. You've been helping not just yourself but others get fitter and embrace bicycling as a lifestyle. That's very fascinating. Married, kids, of course, all that good stuff. Anything else I missed?
No, I think you covered most of the good stuff. We can leave the bad stuff out for now.
yeah. Well, okay. All right, great. So, obviously, we are here to talk about your own journey into bicycling and some amazing, crazy stuff you do, some rides you take on. I've been seeing that on Facebook in the last few years. You've been very, very active. So, let's get back maybe to the beginning in terms of how it all started. How did you actually become a take on cycling? It's a serious way.
Well, before starting cycling, I've been an avid hiker. I used to hike a lot, as a hobby and nearby. Bay Area is full of hills. So I used to do that and also go to nearby, endurance hikes and other things. And the cycling one is started by an accident in the sense like I used to commute a lot to work. It's not far. It's about 25 miles away. I live in Fremont and commuting to Mountain View and Palo Alto, where I used to work. I used to sit in the car for 90 minutes one way. So that's about 3 hours in a day gone by. And, I used to see some of these bicyclists going past me and other things when literally it was like a parking lot. Like they're zooming in through me. And someday I used to watch how far he goes and he used to disappear. I never used to catch them up. And this is wondering, I don't know how far they, I had no clue about how far they, where they come from and the other things. So That is where my curiosity umbrella went up, you know, curious antenna went up. And, you know, and it was basically, it started as a way for me to save time and get some exercise. When I did my research, I said, like, holy cow, it takes only 70 minutes one way to bicycle. That means I'm saving 20 minutes one way. That's 40 minutes of saving per day.
Yeah.
And I'm getting my workout. That's how it started, you know. And I went and immediately got a bicycle and then started bicycling twice a week with all the gear, everything set up. And then, you know, increased it to 3 days and then all 5 days kind of thing. So that basically became my workout. That's how I started. And it was all flats, you know. And it was a beginner's, you know, bicycling. And, you know, and then since I was, you know, like doing for the work, you know, I started having fun, like, you know, going through the nature and saving some time, and then started getting a few friends along with me saying that, hey, you also should guys should do it. You are also working in Mountain View and Sunnyvale and Palo Alto. There are bike paths here. You should do it. So that's how the journey started.
Nice, nice. So tell us, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, for most bicyclists, right, especially for folks who are moving from zero to bicycling, a lot of confusion around, you know, what's the first bike I should buy? You know, you go to Walmart, or do I go to a, you know, a bike store and get a pay $2,000 and buy a bike? And it's usually for most people a huge mental block to spend $2,000 on a bike. I can buy a car for that much, right? So how did you handle that dilemma? You know, what kind of bike did you buy the first time, and why did you make that decision? Can you talk to that a little bit?
Well, you know,
and what year was this? And what year was this?
This is around 2013 or 2014, I would say. This is when it started. No, the first bike is, I did my own research. Like, okay, I needed a road bike. I'm going to commute about 25 miles one way. So there's no way the Walmart bikes, which are 50, 60 pounds, will do that job for me. It's not a recreation. So I needed a semi-lighter bike. And I had the budget in frame. Like, you know, I don't want to spend too much. Okay, I started with $1,000. And $1,000, there is nothing that is fitting me. And then I went on to spend closer to $2,000. But I made sure that it fits my needs. You know, I was not into mountain climbing. We can come to that later.
Right.
You know, so it is all flats. So flats means the gear ratio is different. And you just need a lighter bike and a fast bike to carry you from place A to place B. And then you have your backpack and other things also. So with being mindful, those are the key decision drivers which narrowed me. And then for me, $2,000 at that time was not a big deal. I look at a holistic view. I'm getting my workout. So that is like 24 hours gym fees that is saved. I'm stopped paying the toll fees that I cross over the bridge. That's like $5 to $6 a day. And then the gas money that I'm spending on the car. So my math was like, if I use this bike for 2 years, my ROI is all recovered and then it's free. So that's how I looked at it. It's like, okay, $2,000 is nothing, because on the long run, I'm actually saving a lot of money. So that convinced me to move from $1,000 to $2,000.
Nice. And what bike did you buy? What was the one you bought the first time?
Cannondale CAD 10. At that time, it was the lightest aluminum bike. And still people craze about that CAD series of aluminum bikes for racing.
Right.
But that is the bike I bought.
Nice. And also, I would just add another element to what you said, especially for folks who are listening to this and thinking about investing in a bike. You know, when I bought my first bicycle, the other thing that I was advised is to look at a good, you know, a gear system, right? Because if you're going on those 20, 30 miles of riding, you don't want to have breakdowns all the time and, you know, gears coming off and, you know, it's unpleasant experience. So you need something that lasts, and sometimes you pay a little bit of a premium for that quality as well, right? So that was another thing that I heard when I started.
Yeah, so I mean, the modern bikes, decent bikes have, you know, very good, you know, parts like Shimano parts or
SRAM
parts. Parts are very good. You know, they all come with either one of them. and they have a different levels of quality within them, and you get what you pay for, but most of them are reliable. And it's all about smoothness and how you want to handle it. That's pretty much it. But the another aspect called gear ratio, like that's where it comes in. Like, you know, are you going to use this bike predominantly for the flats? So the gear ratio is like, you know, it doesn't matter. You can go for a different kind of gear ratio. But when it comes to climbing, then your gear ratio should be pretty good to help you or to assist you. It is not the same. So you need to buy the bike which will support you, the speed and the gear ratio associated with the climbing ability. So that is becomes a different ball game altogether.
So how does somebody know that about gear ratios? I mean, do they just go to a bike store and somebody advises them, or do you have any broad guidance on how somebody should make that decision?
Most of the good bike stores, right, they're like a professional bike stores, if you go to them and they ask you these fundamental questions, what is this bike for? And they pretty much advise you. Okay, you are in for the mountains, you are in for the climbing, and this is what suits you. You are in for the long term, take this. And this is the budget kind of thing, right? And I think most bicyclists, once they're into it, 6 months to 1 year, they'll get these things. Once they start biking, climbing is becoming difficult. When they go with friends and other thing, they'll figure it out. So I say your first bike will never be the last bike that you're going to buy. It's going to change. Yes. So,
yes. And while you were growing up, I know you grew up in Karnataka as well, in Bangalore area, you know. And so did you cycle those days? Were you cycling a lot when you were growing up as well?
Oh man, you touched a great point. You know, there are some great stories out there. You know, we were crazy cyclists there too, and we were using those rally and hero cycle. You can relate those cycles here. We didn't have these fancy bicycles out there, and we had some crazy stuff there. You know, if you are in Bangalore, from there to there is a place called Muttathi in Mekedat in Muttathi where it's a famous place, you know. And once we friends just decided to get the bicycles on and take that 100 kilometer journey with zero preparation and everything, and you know how much of fun you can get out of it. Remember that
cast iron bicycles.
How much fun we had with each of these friends breaking down flats, fixing it. And then eventually making it out there. We have some great stories out of that trip. So, you know, to cut it short, yes, I was into bicycling in a different level in Bangalore.
Right. I think, and that's what probably kind of got triggered off when you were sitting there watching people just bicycle past you, you know, in California. And it's like, oh, guys, I was doing that in Bangalore. Why am I not doing it here? Kind of a thing, right?
Absolutely. You're so right. You
know? Awesome. So, okay, great. So you started commuting, you know, you got this bicycle and you started doing these 40-mile rides every 4 or 5 days a week. So then how did it go to the next level? I mean, you seem to have become a fairly, regular endurance, long-distance bicycling, right? Doing 100-milers, doing huge climbs. So how did that pivot happen?
Well, you know, since I was doing these flats, doing a 100-miler flats, 125, I did few of those flat things just for curiosity and, you know, what does it take to do it. It was not a big deal because I was already putting on 40, 50 miles a day. Putting in 100 miles with a break, couple of breaks was easy for me. So I didn't feel a big change in it. But I think the real thing that changed is later on years, my jobs changed, and then with the jobs and everything, you know, my personal, like, you know, the burnouts was keeps happening, the creeping in. And, I started telecommuting to Philadelphia for work and coming back, and I lost in touch with the biking a little bit here, cycling, just for a couple of years, I was like out of touch. And then when I came back, I moved back here again. I wanted to get started, but more than commuting, and then the pandemic started actually at that time. You know, when the pandemic started, I wanted to get out. There was no commute because everybody is working from home at that moment. So I wanted to do something, and this flats was not exciting. I wanted to do something that I can learn and explore something else with the cycling. Mm. Then, you know, I used to see this, like when we used to drive around Mont Diablo and Hamilton, and there's a killer grades there, like, you know, 10 to 15 grade to 20 grade thing. I used to see bicyclists, like, you know, sweating and climbing those things. And in one of those, I think in early days, when we went for camping, right, we used to take our bicycles, the Walmart bicycles and other things, and out of curiosity, hey, let's go bike, you know. We tried to bike that hill. We couldn't even cross 100 meters, forget to like 2 miles, 3 miles, 100 meters, and turn back and put the bike back into the camp. So I used to wonder, how does these guys climb? Okay, let me try that. So there are so many hills around here. I tried one of those hills, moderate hills here. I came back like little, completely beaten up, saying that, you know, oh, this is tough. No, why? I used to bike 50 miles and other thing. And then I realized, this is a different ball game. This requires a different skill set and a different level of fitness. That was a realization that hit me. But I was up for the challenge, though. Up for the challenge and said, like, this is going to be fun. Let me improve on it. And I started putting some skidoo as a kid, right? You know, I always believe that you have to bring some passion into whatever you do. So I got that childlike curiosity into it and said, like, what do I do to improve on it? Okay, I have a good bike, not bad enough. Like, you know, I can still use the same bike. Okay, I don't have to invest on it. But I need to invest on being more consistent on it. And then put up a calendar. Okay, every Saturday I'm going to go out for the rides. And then every ride I'm going to do from now on, like weekly, twice I do, I will include at least a small climb, sweat it out and come. And that's one thing. And this is where it started. And then I started measuring the heart rate, like, you know, because I had a smartwatch, and then it's like closely observing what should be my heart rate should be. It is very high. How do I bring it down? So there's a lot of challenges there. How do I bring it down? I don't think there's pros and even the amateurs, I was a beginner at that time, will bike for 5-6 hours at a, you know, zone 4 or a zone 5 of your heart, because they cannot sustain it. That means they bring it down to zone 2, zone 1 and zone 2 to be able to sustain it for a long time. How do I bring it down? What kind of exercise routine I need to do? What kind of nutrition I should, should I adapt at home? So all these thoughts came in. And that gave me a good recipe of like changing my lifestyle completely. So that's when it started, and I started loving it. And bicycling was boring on the flats. It became interesting and it became exciting. And then it never ended from there.
So let's double click on that a little bit, right? You said you had to make some significant changes to training. So you said, you know, you had to figure out how to get your heart rate down. And also you talked about nutrition. So what if you can just kind of maybe look at the, give us a sense of the top three in your mind that changes you had to make to get to that level of fitness?
There were three things, actually. I missed out on one. You know, personally, I am had to do a lot of boxing in terms of having a good sleep quality, you know, because I've been a workaholic and got into my system. Yeah, I take a lot of things in my head when you go to sleep. So I really could not sleep. I had to do a lot. So that was also affecting my little bit of health and other things. So I needed to work on my sleep quality. So bicycling taught me that you need to work on your sleep quality, because that's when you recover for the next day. To get the best benefit out of the workout, you have to sleep. Second thing is the nutrition. What you eat and what you throw into the body, what you throw into your mind and what you throw into the body is what you become. So that one I wanted to watch out. And as a family, my wife is a great partner in it. You know, whatever we do together. And even the nutrition, what we eat, it's the same thing. So we change our lifestyle around it, you know, Monday to Friday, what do we do? And then weekend, what do? We just laid out that and made sure that it helps our journey here. That is another thing that we did. And the third part is like, you know, just putting a calendar, like what do I need in terms of workout for the bicycle, to improve the bicycling, not only bicycling or hiking, right? Same thing. Like I want to to improve on a cardiovascular system. So I introduced like at least 2 days of HIIT program to myself. Okay. I do it in my, I have my own HIIT program that I do in my backyard. It's all like I don't go to gym. I do it here. And then I include some weights around it, a small weights for the HIIT. So that keeps me pumping. And then also have a one day of yoga that I do and rest it out completely. Rest is also important. So I don't work out like all 7 days. So, you know, 1 or 2 days, I make sure that I go low. And then the Saturday, we go for a long ride. So those are the subtle changes, the sleep and the nutrition, you know, discipline, and then the prep work that is required for the long rides. You know, those three things, we put a discipline around it.
And on HIIT, you talked about HIIT. Now, is that something you were using your heart rate to get to your zone 4, zone 5? And what kind of workouts are you doing for HIIT?
See, on a HIIT, right? A HIIT is basically your, again, it improves your cardiovascular system and ability to bike tough terrains and other things. But it also gives you, it also I mix up with some of these bike-related exercises. For example, there is a suitcase lift that we do where to people can do, you know, a search on it, where we lift the weight on one side to improve the leg strength, and also use kettlebell swings, which gives you that. So those are two or three examples that I give, and then I use step tool basically, you know, to jump and get back to get the power building. So I mix some of these things, but again, I use the HIIT as a framework here, one minute of exercise, 30 second or 45 second of rest, and then 1 minute of exercise. So the framework is it, but I incorporate some of these biking related exercises into it.
Got it. And in terms of nutrition, you said changes. So what changed? What did you have to give up, or what did you have to add to your new lifestyle?
Yeah, there are a couple of things which drove the decision, right? When I look back and our things most of us from our families, we have genetically we inherited something or the other thing. Like when I see my brothers and my parents and other things, like blood pressure, diabetes, you know, a ton of things we incur, you know, and then the modern day things that we are getting through, we don't know what we are putting inside, the ton of things. So this forced me to change. So a few of the things that we have been doing since even before the bicycling started is like we cut down a lot of carbs. We are like breakfast is, it been our millets or ragi thing or like, oat kind of thing. That's pretty much it. And then the fruits that and then we have one lunch and then evening that most of the time, Monday to Friday, it's a salad. With a little bit of quinoa, or just pure salad with curds. That's pretty much it. So it's one meal. Earlier, when we started this, like we were feeling hungry. You know, salad was not filling in, but now it is not. We are normal. So Monday to Friday is like that. We don't change for whatever reason. Our kids also like, you know, except, you know, for some days, they also follow the same thing. That helps a lot in a family and wife. Everybody supports, and I think it's an amazing thing. Yeah. It helps your health as well as family's health. And then only because, you know, Saturday and Sunday, we indulge with friends and we can't force them to eat salad or when we go there. So we have like those 2 days as a cheat days.
Where we eat the biryani on those days.
Biryani, pulao, whatever flavored rice. I'm a big sucker for that anyway. So those are the cheat days that we have.
Right. No, that makes sense. And I think there's a lot more research literature now, and if, you know, anybody can Google it, that kind of points to that getting that carb load down on a day-to-day basis helps with reduction of inflammation, and therefore you're recovering better, and also, you know, obviously avoiding that whole insulin resistance issues that most of us South Asians have. I've read that, you know, South Asians are one of the largest populations in the world that are, diabetes are, you know, so that makes a lot of sense. So great. So you got fit. It seems like you're getting stronger. You're getting, meaner because your nutrition has gotten better. I guess your power also, in cycling, you talk a lot about power outage, wattage, right? As a way of measuring whether you're doing well. So I suppose you were also doing improving on that parameter as well as all these changes were happening, correct?
Yeah. So, you know, when we sign up for some of these, big events like 100 miles or a double century or like a big climbs, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the events are like a time boxed. So when it's a time box, it's like, you know, you've got to finish in 10 hours or 11 hours, that kind of thing, because, you know, there is kind of a small recognition they do because of those things. So when you're a time box, then it forces you to look into that and say, like, you know, how do I meet those things? You know, I mean, by the way, we are all amateur bicyclists, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Our trainer becoming a pro has never arrived and never, I don't even say it has left. It never arrived in our genetics.
You suffer for fun.
Yeah.
You don't suffer for being paid.
So in that sense, you know, it is fun for us to look into those aspects, right? It is time box. Yeah, so yeah, how do I improve on it? Yeah. So when I look into that improvement and that factor, then you say like, okay, you break it to small rides into that zone. It's like, okay, I'm going for a 30 mile ride now. I need to finish this at 14 miles per hour. Ratio-wise, we keep the same way, 30 miles and 4,000 feet climb kind of thing. Ratio is same, but I try to do that. Okay, if I do that at 14 miles per hour, then I'm good to complete 200 miles at 12 miles per hour. You know, that kind of a thing. Somehow we break that up. So that is where we look into parameters like, you know, to get that kind of a speed and thing, what do I do? Then it's like power alone won't do it. Power is good, but you can't be pumping your heart at Z4, Z5. So to ease that out, then how do you improve the cadence? Helps you to go at a lower heart zone, but maintain, you know, but your legs are at a higher cadence, but you know, you're making up with the speed and other things, right? So there is a balance you have to strike. You can't be pumping the power always, but use the power when the sharp climbs and other comes in, but on the flats and other thing, use the cadence. So there's always you look for balance when it comes to endurance. These are the drivers, like, you know, when we sign up for big things, when we start improving, looking forward to that, then we apply those things and start improving.
Makes sense. I mean, I think there's a lot of excellent tips there, Shankar, especially folks who are just cycling casually and want to take it to the next level. These are great awareness of certain, you know, these are things to be aware of as you move to the next level. And because otherwise you're, you know, walking around with some cyclists and they're saying, hey, what's your wattage and what's your cadence? And you're like, oh, okay, I have no clue what you're talking about, but I know I'm suffering. I need to get better. That's a good, I think, good to take that down, write that down. Awesome. So let's kind of zoom in to some of those recent rides you've done, right? And I saw that you did the Death Valley ride. You've done you've climbed Mount Whitney, all 14,000 plus feet climbs. That, you know, to someone like me who's not a major cyclist, that sounds incredible. So let's get a little bit into about how those rides. How did you go about, you know, picking those rides, and how was it? And you did that with your wife, so that's even more fascinating.
Yeah, you know, initially it was a hard sell for my wife, but I think once she took her through the journey of, you know, a few of the climbs here, and told her like, you need to stick with this for 6 months. For 6 months will be hard. You stick with it. Do not ask any question. Just keep doing it. You'll get better at it. And then once she got better, she got confident. She started enjoying the fun, and then it becomes much more easier. And then and when we sign up for the bigger things like this, when I give her idea, let's do this kind of thing, I'm the one actually help her or my friends break it down to easier things.
Okay.
Hey, to do that, let's break it down. Let's stop doing this kind of things for weekly, and then we should be able to do that kind of thing. So that way we were able to do it. And one of the first and toughest thing that we did was together was Beartooth Pass. We went to Yellowstone, And
Okay.
you know, when we went to Yellowstone, I said, like, it's so close by to Montana anyway, Beartooth Pass. Oh, you know, we took our bicycles also from here. We drove and go went there. It's like, let's do Beartooth Pass. It is like one of the very scenic places, and it's a 30-mile ride, and it starts at 5,000 foot and all the way goes onto the 11,000 foot kind of thing. So before going there, 2 days we acclimatized at 8,000 foot in the Yellowstone, some hikes here and there, because people thought 11,000 you may have a tough time. So that was the first time I biked at that high, you know, that high altitude, right? So a couple of days we like soaked ourselves in 8,000 to 9,000 foot, and then say like next day we took our bikes, and then it was one of the memorable you know thing for both of us, because it was you know we prepared as much as we can in terms of biking, but the logistics of able to finish it was was fun, you know. And in the end, we were almost at the sunset when we reached there, and you know, we were coming down completely in the dark. So 30-mile ride downhill was completely in the dark, and there was not even one single car there in the road. So that was good, you know. We had our adventure there. That's where we started. So at 11K, that was fun. And
And
after that,
do you have lights when you coming down, or you was like just using sonar technology you came down?
no, we had lights. Now we were prepared for all
Okay.
those. We prepared a lot on the. We had lights. We had our attire, which is glowing and was visible. I can be. We both were visible even like 2 miles away when the light flashes on us. We have everything that to safeguard and other things. We follow all those things. But the funny part is, it's a Beartooth Pass, right? So there are cover. No, this is the funniest part. So my wife on the downhill never comes fast, and she comes like at a decent speed of 15, 20 miles, and she's like, I won't force her, because that is something we go for ascents, not for descents one, because you know, I like some descents, I like it, some I don't like it, you know. So I also take care of that one. So I know she's slow on the descents, and this is a fun part. Well, coming down, it was dark, and so like, you know, you just follow me, stick to me kind of thing. And then we kept on seeing signs of grizzly bear while ascending the whole thing and other thing. And then while coming down, she is like, I'm coming, I didn't know the speed, you know, I'm coming at 20 miles, 25, 30 miles, and look back once in a while, she's right behind me. And then after, it was all downhill for 30 miles, right? That's 25 miles. And I came, you coming so fast. It's like, you know, I was so scared. I'm so scared of the shadow. Shadow felt like there was a bear chasing me or something. First time she came so fast right behind me, I was like, okay, holy cow. That is a fun part.
Funny. I've seen memes, you know, with the bicyclist running, biking faster with a grizzly bear running behind it. This is like true story.
Yeah, but you can never outrun or outride a bear. Those bear can run as fast as 30 miles easily. People
Oh,
don't
really?
realize it. Yeah, people don't
Wow,
realize
wow.
it. Yeah.
Wow. Cool. Okay, so that was the first one. That's then what happened? Then you bit the bullet.
Yeah, I bit the bullet, and then I think our confidence went, her confidence went high, and then we also, you know, we also have a huge hiking community with us, friends with us, and hiking is something I had been doing in my past life, and why I took the biking right now. And so like, people used to do a lot of good hikes here, so Mount Whitney was one of them. I had done a low to high hike from Badwaters to Whitney the previous year, 2021. That was with my friends. The friends group, and not with my wife. And that prompted me that tell my wife, like, we don't have to do the low to high from Badwaters Death Valley to the Whitney. Right at the Whitney itself, there is a 5,000 foot climb from Lone Pine. Let's do that, and then from the portal we can hike the whole Whitney. So I got the permit for that. So that is fascinating. Hey, not many people will do that. So we kept up like a mini challenge with our friends, saying that in 24 hours, both the events has to start within the 24 hours. Let's bike the first part, and the second part, let's hike it too. And that also created an amazing story. We were, and so we, that was with my wife and another couple and a friend of mine. We went.
Mm-hmm.
We all, biked from Lone Pine to Whitney Portal. And then we came and slept. The next day morning, 1 a.m. the morning, we went. And actually, a lot of people had warned us not to go. There's a storm warning and other things. And when we got out of the car, you know, we had 2 layers on it, and we had other 3 layers to wear when we go, as we reach the summit, right? It gets colder and colder. It was in May. So it was so cold, right at the parking lot there. We took out all the layers that was in the bag, and we put on the 5 layers right there. And believe it or not, we never removed any of them until we came back. So we started at 1 a.m. and we came back at 11 p.m. The same day. And that was one hell of a hike because...
11 p.m., so following night. So...
Following night. And that one hell of a hike because we could see people turning back with, AMS issues. And we also had my wife and, her friend, Opisha, she also had a little bit of issues with... But we were like taking one step at a time. They were determined to, okay, we don't come here very often. Let's do it kind of thing. And we took like 10 step at a time, take a break, 10 step, take a break. And there was a lot of people told like at 2 or 3 p.m., wherever you are to turn back. But at 2 or 3 p.m., we were like at least even 10% short of going to summit. And like I was with them, you know. Another thing with me is, hiking or biking, I am like no drop philosophy. I'll always be the last person kind of thing. So I was with them. So just going along with them, just roughing along, are you okay? Are you okay? Because there are a few people on the way we saw with completely bad shape, bad shape. So that was demoralizing for them too. But somehow we made it to the top. We couldn't even stand with the wind that was blowing. If you see our photos, for the good photo, we couldn't even take our hoods up, people say like, you could have taken a nice photo there, no chance, I couldn't even take it out. So, we did it, and that was in 24 hours, and that was a great story. Again, we did it together, after that, we came back, we had signed up for what you call as a death ride.
Yeah. Before you go to death ride, so this Mount Whitney thing. So you took 22 hours to hike, and there's almost like 1 p.m., 1 a.m., and then you're back at 11 p.m. So that's like almost 22 hours, and then 2 hours to cycle up to the portal. So that
I wouldn't say 2 hours. You know, it took more than 5 hours. Our gaming was we should start the second activity before the start of our first activity, kind of within 24 hours of first activity, something like that.
Okay.
So because we wanted to have a rest time also.
Right. Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing adventure there. Awesome. Sorry. Yeah, you were beginning to talk about Death Valley. Please.
Death Ride. There's something called the Death Ride that happens near Makli Ville. It's near Lake Tahoe here, and this is something we wanted to do the previous year with some of my friends, and we all went there. We had some fun there, but we never, due to the wildfire, the whole event was canceled. But we friends were all had fun saying that, okay, we don't have to do dishes or laundry at home. So we stayed in the hotel, had fun, and came back. And then this year, we signed up, and I told my wife, you should sign up too, because the way you're biking and everything, this is something you have to do. She was like, no way. That is like 100 miles and 14,500 feet climb. You know, Mount Whitney was what I did was 5,000 foot climb, not like 14,500. And there's a time box too. I'm not going to do that. You know, she was like a little bit tough. I told her, let me work that out for you. Put up a plan for you. Then I bought an indoor bike for her, like a Wahoo, thing on that bike. I created that death ride segments, saying that there is a one climb. There are 6 climbs actually there. So there's one climb, 2 climb, all those routes I can create with the Ruby. I created all those routes and say like, why don't you bike these things when you're biking indoor and see if you get a confidence. You get visualization will help you. For me also, it'll help me. I also did a couple of them. So once she did one or two of them, which were nasty, she got confidence. Oh, okay, I did one, two, and then I think, well, we can sign up. But that was not enough. So 4 or 5 weeks before, there are hills like right here, Mount Diablo and Mount Hamilton, right? So we started a journey. So first week, 4 weeks before first week, we did one round of Mount Diablo, 1x basically. And then second week, we did Mount Hamilton of 1x, so one trip. And the third week, we did Mount Diablo 2x, two rounds of like a 3,000, it's a 3,300 foot climb. Let's do twice, kind of thing. And then other week, we went and did Mount Hamilton twice. That is a 5,000 foot climb, about twice. That's 10,000 foot. That was hard. And then the prior week before Death Ride, we did 3x of Mount Diablo, like three times Mount Diablo, going back and forth. It takes a whole day. So that gives a 10,000 foot climb right there. So how we mapped that into Death Ride is each of the Death Ride climbs are 3,000 foot. So we marked that, okay, that is one Mount Diablo, second Mount Diablo, third Mount Diablo. So if we can do this three times here, in Bay Area right here, that means we can conquer those three climbs. And then the fourth and five, fifth one or smaller ones, we can push it because we're in the event, we can push that thing. So we
Makes
went
sense.
there and we started at somewhere around 3 a.m. Everybody starts at 5 a.m. We wanted to give a buffer time. We started on 3:30. Some of us started 3 and some of us started 3:30, and I started 4 to be behind them. Again, no drop kind of thing. I had to be with my wife also. So, you know, so kind of thing. I sent her early, an hour so early, so I can catch up with her. And then that way, along with our friends, we had a good friends community. So they all sign up. Most of them sign up for this, prepare. We all train and sign up and do these things together. So that's how we went and conquered this death ride. And we were. We just made on time and came there. And there's a huge signing board there. And I told my friend, we were teasing each other. They gave us a pen to sign because we completed the ride on time. And like I was signing, like I was trying to find a space to sign. And my friend is there. His name is like in a South Indian name, long name. He's trying to find a real estate to sign there. I said, like, you want a space here, next time come 2 hours early. Go train harder and cool,
Good
come 2 hours early. You can put your whole name and you can write in your name in Canada too if you want. So that's how we
Awesome.
conquered that ride, you know.
Nice. That's awesome. That sounds a lot of fun, and also the kind of training that you seem to have put behind it is fascinating, right? Because I think some of us who live on this side of the world, Texas, mostly flatland, so we don't have to train this hard to do 100-mile rides. But definitely, I think your training strategy of doing those 3x for those kind of thing, it's a great, I think good gold there, great tips.
Santosh, I want to add one more thing. This is all the physical training and endurance training we do. The another part is nutrition kind of thing. During the rides becomes very important. That also you need to train. When to eat and what to eat becomes very, very. Everybody's body is different. I've seen some people living on the bars and other thing. I can't take too much sugar, kind of thing, because your glycogen gets depleted and you get tanked quickly. So you got to figure out what works for you. And also eating small bites here and there, your system is not used to it. On the long rides, you need to give a proper break, like lunch break, 20 minutes, eat a proper meal also. And also, very, very important thing is people quickly will realize, all the bicyclists, when you summit, right at the summit, when you want to eat, you eat on the summit. Eat at the top, because when you're coming down or descending down, your heart rate, everything is lower. And that means you're allowing that heart to help your digesting system. And then that kind of, otherwise, if you're eating at the bottom and trying to climb, your heart is used for the muscle and other thing, all the food you're going to be wasted. When to eat, how to eat, that is going to be you know, part of the training process also. And that is, people have to be mindful of it.
Makes sense. And I think very similar, you know, protocols in long distance running as well, right? When to eat is, and what to eat becomes a very crucial make or break sometimes, right? You can, if you don't do it right, you could bonk and just be out of energy and you won't be able to even finish your rides, these kind of rides, right? So, so you do you have Anna Saru in your rides, or it's mostly packaged food?
No, it is for the most of the rides and rides we make our own smoothie, you know, our own blended smoothie at home, and we take it with a pouch. And you know, like 50 miles one smoothie, if it is 100 miles we take two smoothie bottles, and that smoothie basically consists of almonds, a little bit of almonds, dates, and lots of berries, you know, lots of berries, banana. And then and then a little bit of honey into it, that the sugary banana and sugar gives you that thing. So this is a natural sugar, and the berries which keeps me going. The banana is the potassium also keeps me going. So apart from that, I experiment. I used to eat bars and other things, that all the artificial things that comes in. But now after the smoothie thing, you know, I don't eat bars at all. I don't carry bars at all. And I used to get a lot of acidic eating all those bars and other things. But with the smoothie that I'm taking, I'm not getting that acidity that I used to get. So that is where you have to figure out what works for you. And then in between, like 2-3 hours, you have a proper meal, like a sandwich. We carry a sandwich. If there is a sandwich place, we take it. If we know that route doesn't have any, it's like a wild place and it doesn't have any you know, restaurants or anything, we carry our own sandwiches kind of thing.
Right,
we have a proper meal every 3 hours, because to flush out our system. So the smoothie and water keeps me going.
Awesome. I've had some Bay Area ultra runners who actually take dal chawal as for their during their ultra long runs, and basically ghee, there's carbs and there is protein. So it's a good long distance fuel. That's why I asked Anna Saru part of it. Anyway, awesome. So, and also talking about, you mentioned a lot of your friends being a part of this, and it, and I've seen this challenge that you've created, right? In on Facebook, I've seen you last year, you did some 232 days of activity and some 32,000 feet of gain and some crazy statistics out there. So you seem to have created a community around this challenge. And so talk to us a little bit of what that is and how you are kind of motivating others to embrace this.
Well, you know, since I've been doing this for a while, you know, when the pandemic came in, it all started during the pandemic, you know, 2020, I saw like it was very depressing for everyone, staying at home, and it was, you know, going to somebody's home or coming to our home. It was like, you know, it was very hard. But I thought outdoor is safe, you know, why can't we do the cycling part of it? So I had to sell this idea to a couple of my friends, started with a couple of my friends. And say, like, let's bike regularly. And then we got our spouses into it also, saying that, hey, what are you doing? Like, we are having fun. You're not having fun. You should also come and do it. It's a lot of fun. Start doing it. So they also got the bikes and started doing it. They realized that once it's a social connections. And they really did not know at that time what they're getting into, because I had my vision there. I started getting them into small climbs here and there. Hey, let's go to this route, you know. I'll create a route and say, like, let's meet at this point. Let's go here. Let's go there, kind of thing. And they also started seeing places that they are not seen, being in Bay Area for like 15, 20 years. So, you know, that opened up for excitement for everybody. Okay, let's do this, and it is safe, and kind of thing. And it's a great outlet. So that is when he started. But I'm one of those guys, like, very persistent on, you know, on my close friend, saying that do this right. And I've written some documents on safety. You know, I can spend time on make sure you read the safety document, make sure you invest your time and learning process, make sure you don't get lost on reaching the summit kind of thing as a big goal in your life, you know, enjoy the journey kind of thing, right? I keep on insisting some of these things and you know, I help them through this process. That's how we started. Then there is a, you know, need to get out. And then there is a social aspect to get out. And then there is a physical activity that came in. And then stickiness was missing. Always it is me Friday evening calling them and saying, like, let's get out kind of thing. You know, they are almost like friends are like, oh, call's coming. You should not take that call kind of thing, you know.
Anger is calling. Let's keep excuses ready.
Yeah, especially my friends won't take it. The way to reach them is I'll call the spouses. They'll kill it. And then they'll say, like, oh, he's right here. He's watching TV. I'll give the phone to him, you know. Oh, so that's how it starts. So, you know, stickiness was missing there. So for the stickiness, then that's accountability, basically. Hey, how do I make it accountable for everybody? Then I started something called a challenge. Hey, every month, there is a target. I'll set the goal for you guys. I don't care whether you bike with me or hike with me or walk with me. You have to put so many miles in a month. People will say, like, okay, let's start with small miles. We started with 1 month target kind of thing, and we had an Excel sheet, and we also accountable. If you don't do it, you have to pay like $5 fine or something. And that gets distributed among others who do it. So it's a reverse accountability too.
Right.
Somebody pays the fine, and others accumulate. So basically, they, you know, it debits to others, right? It credits to others. So that was a fun kind of thing we started. Then monthly maintaining that was pretty hard for me. So I made it to quarterly kind of thing, you know. And then in 2021, I brought expanded it to like 10 people and so let it run for a year kind of thing. And then 2022, we included like a little bit of extra group, other group that I was part of cycling. And then made it an annual thing. I know I thought through this and say, like, I should not be maintaining every month, every quarter. I should have this blueprint running. Once I set it up, I should look back only at the end of the year kind of thing. So I explained to them how it works. And then that is where, like, you know, it started distilling with the larger people. And then the whole journey of this challenge started. And now, you know, in 3 years, we have close to 100 seats that are taken, and then actually we start, there are a lot of waiting lists here. We stopped taking people because I don't have the infrastructure to handle it. I always say, whether it's a startup or initiative or anything, right? I say they don't die of starvation, they actually die of indigestion, not able to handle the customer needs, you know, not able to handle their requirements, features, right? That kind of a thing. That's why, like, let me just do a good job of, you know, this group first. Next year, I can think of putting up a website, you know, putting some little bit of automation so that we can expand kind of thing. Yeah. So that is where we put the box in, and we are focused on that one.
And your website definitely is... we can share a link to the website on the show notes, I think, right, for others to check it out. So your data collection, is it automated now, in the sense that, let's say you're saying the challenge is, say somebody has to do 10,000 miles of riding a year, just as an example, right? So how's that getting reported? Are you manually doing it today, or how are you tracking it?
There's no manual. There are two things I tell. I think it's all described in my website. Somebody goes and spends like 15, 20 minutes. They can get, you know, whole aspect of the challenge. And encourage them to go there and see it. And they should actually participate, or, you know, if they are a lead kind of thing, if they are like me, they can start their own chapter if they want to. To, in a nutshell, I can tell you, this is a honor-based system. That's one thing. Second thing is, it is automated. Automatically, if you have a smart device like Apple, or most of them use Garmin kind of thing, and it collects the metrics, and it's activity-based metrics. We don't collect day-long steps or anything. It is not about step program. You have to start an activity and stop an activity. So that activity, whether it is a biking or walking or hiking or running, it's collected. And we paired with a Strava. We are a Strava community. So it gets uploaded to Strava. And in the Strava, we have challenges that we are grouped there. And that is where it automatically people see, you know, the leaderboard and, you know, where they stand and what is their quarterly target. Basically, we are not about a leaderboard. We don't encourage that leaderboard kind of thing. But it's all about personal growth. Right. So what we have done is we have a quarterly goal and an annual goal. Every quarter, like a sales target, you have to meet that quarterly target. If you don't meet that quarterly target, you have a penalty of $10. Okay. And that $10 gets distributed for those who have met the quarterly goal. So that is how it works. And then we keep on going. Annual goal, there is a separate penalty for. So that's how it goes. You are benchmarking against the goals that we have set, and it is a personal growth that we, you know, we are encouraging, not the leaderboard. And there's no prizes for anybody who comes first or on the top or anything. There's no prizes.
In the end,
what we do is we collect all the penalties, and actually the even the positive ones, nobody gets the money. But we collect all the penalties in the equivalent of USD dollars. Then we run a poll like for the charity, whichever the charity is selected among the poll, we donate that amount to the charity. So there is a charity aspect to the challenge too.
Nice. Awesome. Sounds very, very exciting. And I think a great way to gamify, fitness, right? Because a lot of people, the biggest challenge they have is self-motivation. Like you said, this Friday call, you have to keep chasing people to go out and be consistent. And something like this helps people just see that and, you know, self-motivate instead of chasing them to do it. That's amazing. We have, so, you know, in one of the groups that I mentor here locally, we do that for steps, not for activity, but there's an app that we use where it captures steps and we do a bit of a gamification around that, but not, we still haven't added the dollar element, but I think that's a great idea. that adds a little bit more stake at stakeness for people.
Yeah, I know. I mean, not only that, you know, in our private group, we don't call it publicly. In the private WhatsApp group or something, we have two categories, scholars, Hall of Fame. Those who complete at certain level of accomplishment they do, they go into category called Hall of Fame, that it's on the website. And we call those who do not meet any of these standards, we call them Hall of Slugs. We don't publish on the website, but on the private channel, we call them, you know, Hall of Shame or Hall of Slugs,
all
right
of
here. So we list it so people doesn't... If people are sensitive, doesn't want to be in that list, they have to work hard. See, again, the two aspects, Santosh, we have to touch base here is we all want to do fitness. We have been doing fitness, or you have been doing fitness, and we have seen a lot of friends, community doing it. The two biggest factors that affect this procrastination and consistency, right? This is where this challenge is helping. People take breaks. There is events in the family, take a break. You are traveling, you take a break. You know, you're sick, you take a break. So when you think of getting back to fitness after all these events that happens in your life, like business travel, whatever, you're all like procrastination. Oh, I'll do tomorrow. Let me do it and let me rest kind of thing, right? But this challenge, it kicks you back. The people last year, I have a lot of feedback I got as like, it got me back into the thing that, hey, I need to do this, right? Let me get back and go for a hike, go for a run, go for a bike ride kind of thing. Right. So that has kept them back on the fitness because it is a year-long thing. It is not a one-off thing that they can do and get over with it. So that is where it has helped them out on this journey. So I hear some great personal stories around it.
Awesome. It's amazing. It's a great initiative. I'm following that pretty closely, and we've talked about it. So, I think we covered quite a bit of ground here, Shankar. I think a fascinating story, and you know, like you said, it's just not about doing it for yourself. You discovered value in it. You're kind of spreading that good word to others. You know, it's a multiplication effort, like a ripple effect, right? When one person finds something of value, how it ripples out and others gain from it. So that's quite a fascinating story. And how you've conquered, you know, bicycling the way you've done is very inspiring. So hope you keep pushing limits. So what next on your horizon, on your adventure? What's up for 2023 and 2024?
Well, you know, definitely keep building on this RSVP challenge program, spread the love, beyond the boundaries that we are in right now. to other places. That is my next thing. And also expand on our charity programs along with it. See how far we can go on that one. That is definitely on my radar. On the cycling front, I definitely have this low to high, project like Bad Waters to Mount Whitney that I did in 2021. I want to do it as a couple, together. So she was not there in 2021. She was just picking and biking up. So I want to take her through the journey. It's a beautiful ride from low to high. We'd like to do that. And then a couple of other things I have is Hawaii Haleakala, Haleakala climb that we have. This is a 10K climb from 0 foot to 10K, about 36 miles. This is similar to Baytooth Pass, but it is triple in size, So we want to do that. That is there. And then there is a fun Iceland road trip, about 820 miles on multiple days. We want to do that. So there is a few other things on the radar in the next couple of years. And here in Bay Area, we have a coast-to-coast ride, that I wanted to do. And on hiking front, my thoughts are there. And Mount Kili and maybe base camp, that kind of a thing. But not to put my effort onto hiking yet. So some of these things have taken my taking my energy. So let's see how it goes. I have to balance my time with whatever we have.
Absolutely. Makes sense. Hey, that was great. Great conversation, Shankar. I have a last part of my podcast. We do a fun Q&A round, my guests. So are you ready for that?
Sure.
All right. Let's do that. Okay. So one of my favorite questions for all endurance athletes that I have in my podcast is, we all talk about eating clean and nutrition and all that. But what's your favorite junk food?
Biryani.
Biryani. Red meat biryani.
not red meat. This is pure chicken biryani,
Okay. So that's not too bad, actually. That's not very junk.
Oh, I know. You can classify it as junk because, I'm a sucker for that. If you keep it in front of me, the quantity becomes, the quantity actually relates to junk, right?
Nice. Any you make it at home or is it any favorites?
No, it is. My wife is a great cook, and whatever the style of biryani she makes, I'll be the sucker for it. So.
Nice. All right, a food that you do not like despise. I mean, no, I never eat that.
Oh, that's a, nothing of that type.
No vegetable that's put in front of you. Like some people don't like brinjal, for example. I don't eat brinjal.
No, nothing like that. No. If it's something edible, if it is in edible form, I'll eat it, but nothing that I have. Oh, yeah, what do you call that mulangi in English?
Oh, radish.
Radish thing, radish.
The white root.
White one, I don't, I'm okay still eating it, but I don't like when it is cooked up, the smell and everything, I just don't like it.
So there you go. You have one.
I have one. Okay.
Mulangi. Nice. What's your favorite pre-ride food?
Oh, pre-ride food has to be sandwich with a banana slice in it. That's pretty much it. Yeah, that's
Nice. Okay, what are your sources of inspiration? Is it books, movies, or where do you draw your inspiration in your fitness journey?
Oh, that's a good one. My inspiration comes from a lot of sources. It's not like one source, like you can say from the sports or anything, right? It comes from good things, amazing things that I've seen some entrepreneurs, entrepreneurial community has done it. And then on the sports side, as a keen follower.
So name one. When you think of an inspiration, think of one name that comes to mind.
Roger Federer. I missed out on that one. All this fitness and everything was through the tennis journey that we had as a family. Our kids are into tennis, so Roger Federer comes into that.
Terrific. Awesome. And the last one I have is, if we made a movie of your life story, what genre would you put it in and who would you hire to play your character?
Oh man, that's very hard.
Sports, maybe sports. Sports.
I would not classify it as a sport. There is a lot of things in my life which were not covered. There is my past life and other things. There's a lot of exciting stuff also, including our marriage, including my upbringing, everything. Lots of excitement. Only my close friends know it about it.
We need to have a part two of the podcast now.
There's lots of things that has happened in my life. So I would say, you know, the film won't do justice. It has to be like a three-part series kind of thing.
Okay. Sounds good. I think it's valid now with Netflix and Prime. We're sending you a script. So who will you hire as a who's the actor who would like to play your character?
You know, I would say Ajay Devgan can do it.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
Good one. Good pick. I like it. And I think he fits the adventure, the sporty look as well. So Ajay, we're sending you a script. Look at your inbox. Awesome. That took some time from you to think of. That means, you know, you did give it a serious thought. So that was definitely a lot of work at your end. Awesome, Shankar. That was fun. We learned a few more things in the process. Like I said, we should have a prequel to this podcast about all the other stuff that we didn't talk about. So people can learn and get inspired from your life. Kind of coming to wrap up here. I want to give you the last word. Any final message you want to send to our listeners?
Well, you know, the final word I would say here is whenever we take up any discipline, right, in life, bring that, throw some passion into it, even by force, throw some passion into it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you throw some passion into it, you get that child curiosity into the play. And then the fun starts. Don't do something just for the heck of doing it kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then always focus on the journey element out of it, right? Don't be heckled with the destination and the final prizes or final, like a summit, you know, I reach there. Actually, when I hiked a lot of summits and biked a lot of summits, I don't get any like big feeling about being at the top. Yeah, but it's a journey going with somebody, sharing a story, making them do it, pulling them along, you know, the stories that have happened, fixing the flats, whatever we did, right? Those are the things that remains with us and how we helped other person and other kind of things is what the journey makes interesting and memorable for us, right?
Yeah.
And focus on the journey. The journey can be the learning process when you deep dive. Always deep dive into everything. Childlike curiosity is, that's what I meant. Keep deep dive and diving into the discipline. And I know you won't be a pro. From a beginner, you can get into amateur level, but there's so much learning to do for pure safety and pure health benefits and other things. Deep dive into those things. And I think that will be memorable and keeps you well-rounded, well-being will be built around it.
Yep. Awesome. Beautiful message. I like it. I think passion is definitely a core of who you are, and it makes a lot of sense. Shankar, thanks again for sharing your time and your story with us. I'm sure people who listen to this will take away some great learnings from your own journey. Wish you all the best with whatever you're doing, especially the community project, as well as what you're up to personally. 2023, we'll keep a tab and we'll stay in touch. Thanks again.
Thank you. And it was my pleasure speaking to you, Santosh. And thank you for giving me this opportunity. We'll be in touch. And, hopefully you will cross the bridge on the RSVP challenge side. And, I want you to be on the other side.
Sure. Absolutely. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.